What's up, No Nation? It's Jesse from Plant the Spear back with you for another episode. And today I'm going to talk about, can the Seminoles salvage their season? What does that even look like? Should Florida State make a change at quarterback? Should they go full on youth movement? Should they keep trying to fix this thing? We're going to get into all of that today. So I appreciate you guys tuning in. As you can tell, I'm by myself. We're flying solo today. Have not done one of these in quite some time. You know, this is how we started out, back to the roots. Michael is still out of state, enjoying, you know, just living his best life, doing some fishing, doing all that, all the guy stuff that guys love to do. Basically not stressing about Florida State football like we are. So we're going to let him finish his vacation and enjoy that time out there. And we're going to diagnose this thing together. So I apologize if my flow is a little bit off. Again, like I said, I haven't done a solo show in a while. But I felt like after the post-game instant reaction, look, it was 3 a.m. I had been tailgating all day in the hot sun. It was cooking in Tallahassee on Monday. And then you just saw that product in Dope Campbell Stadium. And it was just such a down mood, you know. And I jumped on afterwards and I wanted to give you guys some thoughts. But I can't promise you it's going to be positive today. I mean, it's not. There's not a whole lot of positives to talk about with this team. But I do want to come back with you now that I've had a few days to kind of process things and think about things and where we can go from here. And I do want to say, as far as the way that post-game show went, like, the thing is, man, we always try and remain positive on this show, right? But we also have to call it like it is. We have to be realistic because that's what you guys expect from us. I also think at the end of the day, it's important to understand that we are a fan outlet, a fan show. I'm a fan. You know, I don't know how many of these, probably none of these guys that cover FSU for a living are season ticket holders, are boosters, are Battles End members. So when this team starts 0-2, when they play like they do, when you spent your money to be in Dope Campbell Stadium and watch that type of product, you know, I'm not saying it's going to, like, no one's taking away my birthday because of this, but at the same time, it's also like, it does kill your mood. You do invest a lot emotionally and financially and all that into this program. So just do keep that in mind. And also one other thing to keep in mind before we jump into this is that Michael will be back this week. And so later on in the week, on Sunday, we're going to record. I'll either have that out for you guys, hopefully Sunday or Monday, depending on what time we end up recording. We are going to go big picture on some of this stuff. Being it's a bye week, I feel like it's a good time. What I'm going to do today is kind of talk about where we're at currently, what can happen going forward. And then in that one, I think we want to talk big picture stuff. How can Florida State recover from the season that we expect them to have? Basically, how can we avoid following the path of the Jimbo Fisher era, right? Where it started, you had some success, you put back-to-back good seasons there. Now, we didn't win the national title, but again, that was kind of out of our control there. And then things just were a steady decline into where this program never recovered. You went into the abyss for a little bit. You had to make coaching changes. That's kind of what we're going to talk about on Sunday. So I know you guys will enjoy that one too. Just some more content throughout the bye week. But that's kind of just to give you guys a heads up of where we're at going into this week. So before I jump into this, I first want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is our friends at the Autograph app. They just rolled out a bunch of cool features, including dark mode, which I got to have because I work at night. Actually, just got off of work, so not a whole lot of sleep again. But that's okay because we're going to burn, you know, we're going to put in the work hours for you guys to get the content that you want. But man, these guys, they got all the content you want. And if you're down on Florida State, and if you're watching this, you probably bleed garnet and gold just like we do. You still want to hear about Florida State. You're still going to follow along this team. You know, you can still be mad, but you can still love the team. But if you're tired of it and it goes real bad, they also have other teams, NFL, NBA, MLB, hockey, I even believe they got on there. They have over 275 teams covered. So even if you want news from someone else, I don't blame you. Go grab this app. It's great for every sports fan, and I'll link it below so you guys can grab it. So let's jump into this thing. First off, I think with the title of this episode, can the Seminoles salvage their season? I think let's talk about what that even means. This is a program, when you talk about Florida State, that has a championship-level standard, right? That was set by Bobby Bowden, God rest his soul. We've seen this program be a dynasty. We've seen three national championships. Even when Jimbo Fisher came in, he did get this program to that national championship standard. And then when it fell off, they made a change. And then, the change happened. And then when Willie Taggart came in, it didn't look great. They made a change there. They brought in Mike Norvell. They stuck with him for a little bit. Things got better. And so going to a bowl game and all that stuff, winning 10 games, we were excited about that last season because we saw the progress. that's not the standard at Florida State. So when I say salvage the season, I think you also have to understand that this season is still going to be a disappointment by all intents and purposes. But going 6-6 or 7-5 and making a bowl, which I do think is possible if some things get corrected, is much better than going 2-10 or 4-8 or something like that, because you actually show that you can pick yourself off the mat, that you can find some momentum. Maybe you keep some of those young guys engaged. Hopefully you keep your recruiting class together, because that's how this is going to get fixed, is by bringing in those talented high school recruits. And we're going to talk about portal versus high school and all that stuff today as well. But so I think you have to define what that even means when I say salvage our season. And I think that is what it means, is try and get to a bowl game at this point. That also gives you 14 extra practices. That also gives you another game, because frankly, I don't know how many guys on this roster are going to want to play in a bowl game. That's not even, I mean, you know, we didn't see a whole lot of them playing a New Year's Six bowl game. Now, there was other reasons for that, and we're going to talk about that too. But I don't know how many guys are going to play in like the Gator Bowl or whatever it is. So you get a chance to get some young guys opportunities, because those are going to be the guys that are going to be here next year. And we're going to talk about whether Florida State should go youth movement or not too. And it's probably at certain positions where they should and some where they shouldn't. So I think that is important to understand. And I think one thing that you often have to understand is one caveat here, and this will play into this part of the conversation. This will also play into the quarterback part of the conversation, which we'll talk about in just a second. Look, we have looked terrible at Florida State. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. You can't deny that. Outside of Miami, and I get you can say Clemson didn't look good against Georgia by losing by 31 points. Are they a national championship team? No. Are they going to play another team like Georgia on their schedule? No. So, you know, Georgia would probably beat, what, 15 to 20 of the top 25 teams by 20 points, 30 points. So I don't think they're losing by 30 points to Georgia, I don't think is as dire as we look losing back-to-back weeks as double-digit favorites to Georgia Tech and Boston College. They could still go out and win an ACC championship. They still have a really good defense. Their offense is just terrible. But I think with that being said, the rest of the ACC has looked like dog water. It has been bad. And so there's still a very, very slim chance. And when I say very slim, I mean like hanging on by a thread, that you could actually sneak your way into that ACC championship game. Now, you're going to need a lot of help. You're going to need to see a lot of improvement. And you're also going, I think if you take one more ACC loss and you got Clemson and Miami on the schedule still, so it's probably going to happen, I think that's the nail in the coffin, right? Now, hear me out. Am I saying we're going to make the ACC championship game? No. I think we're currently on a path to win 2-4 games. I think that's where we're at. You get Charleston Southern, maybe you get one or two other, but I can't find more than about 4 or 5 wins on the schedule without some major changes. So I want to put that on record too. But I think when you talk about going full on youth movement, knowing the things that I just said, trying to make a bowl game, trying to salvage this season to some degree, knowing that the rest of the ACC picture is kind of wide open outside of, and to be honest, Miami looks great, but they played a bad Florida team. You know, we just made Boston College look good. So how good is Miami and how bad is Florida? That remains to be seen too. But I think if you go full youth movement right now in the bye week, and everybody says the bye week is a great time to do it, and I do too, that I think that essentially shows that Mike Norvell is punting on the season and saying that they made mistakes on a lot of these evals, and I think they did, and that they can't fix it. So while from my standpoint, personally, me, Jesse saying this part, I think there are some changes that need to be made from a personnel standpoint. Now, from what Jesse thinks is going to happen based on what I expect these coaches to do, I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of that yet. I think what you're probably going to see happen here, and again, this is just my guess. I could be wrong. Lord knows we were wrong about a lot of things. And this has been a learning experience for us too. You know, we haven't been doing this a long time. We don't get access to practice. We don't get to see things. So this has been a learning experience for us too. But I think you'll probably maybe see some of the youth movement after that Clemson game. You have a bye week after that. At that point, you have a better picture of what the ACC is going to look like. You have a better picture of what your season is going to look like. Maybe you beat Memphis. Maybe you lost to Memphis. At that point, I mean, you're pretty much, you better win all your ACC games to even have a breath of a chance. If you lose to Clemson, I think you're done. And at that point, in my opinion, there's no point in sticking with guys during a failed experiment that aren't going to be here to help you fix it in the future. And so I think you have to go youth movement. You have to start getting these guys some experience. And I think you also have to weigh in Maybe there's some guys that are freshmen that you think could play that you don't want to burn their red shirt. You know, you get four games. But if you go into that after that Clemson week, that or that bye week after Clemson, and you're like, you know, 2-4 or whatever, I don't want to say 0-6, but if you're at that point, I think it's time to kind of burn the whole thing down, put in the young guys, and start over. You just have to. That doesn't have to necessarily be at every position, but I think you need to start getting ready because, again, man, you got Alabama coming into Tallahassee to start the season next year. And if you don't get these guys ready and Alabama comes in and kicks your teeth in week one, that could snowball the rest of the season. Now, you're probably going to have a cupcake after that game. I think it's like Texas A&M Commerce or Kent State or something like that. So, of course, you can rebound, but that's not going to be the way you want to start your season. So, you need to start getting these guys ready. And, frankly, DJ's not going to be here to help you beat Alabama. But we're going to talk about the quarterback position in its own right. So, I just want you to understand those things. That's what I think is most likely to happen. I don't think you're going to see wholesale changes right now, although there are some positions where I think you should see some changes. But that's more the way that I see things going, because I think Mike Norvell, and I don't fault him for this. I think you want to still show that you're trying to fix this, that you're trying to rebound the season. And you do have a bye week to work on some things. Now, to be honest, you had 9 days. I know they spent an extra day in Ireland, so maybe 8 days, but you had 9 days to get better from Georgia Tech to Boston College, and it looked significantly worse. And so I don't know what the bye week is going to fix here, but let's just say you fixed some things. And we're going to talk about what maybe I think they can do and they need to do. What they can fix during the bye week, you come out, say you beat Memphis. And when you look at Memphis, of course, we're going to do a Memphis preview for you guys coming up next week on game week. This might be a chance for you to get right, because when you look back at what Memphis did, and they play Troy this weekend, so I'm going to watch that game, see how they look. But they played North Alabama last week or for the opening week, and they only rushed for like 59, 60 yards or something like that. Right now, I think Florida State would lose to a triple option team that doesn't complete a forward pass, because we don't even know what this pass defense has, because they don't have – our safeties are essentially walk-up linebackers at this point, because they have to help in the run game. You know, we're giving up over 200 yards in rushing offense every single week now. And so I think next week, if you have a team that doesn't run as strong as the previous two teams that you've seen, and frankly, those were the best running teams in the ACC last year, maybe you have a chance to get a win here, right? At home, they're a G5 team. You're more talented than them. You were more talented than the last two. I get all that. They're not a great rushing team. Maybe you can get one win under your belt to get some sort of confidence. Then you get Cal coming all the way over from California. They play, I think, Auburn on Saturday, so we'll have a good idea of what that team's going to look like. That can be a game that you can win, okay? That should be a game that you can win. And so then you've stacked two wins in a row. Then you go to SMU, a team that almost lost to Nevada. That's not an intimidating environment. Maybe you get a win there. Do I think you're going to beat Clemson at home? Probably not. But you could go into that Clemson game at 3-2. And I think that changes a lot of the things. You're halfway to bowl eligibility with Charleston Southern still on the schedule, so that you only need two more out of that. So just keep a lot of those things in mind as we go forward talking about this, okay? But when you look at this team after 2 weeks, the problem is we thought Georgia Tech was going to be a little bit of a, maybe it was a fluke, maybe it's fixable. Hopefully that was not the identity of this team. Then they back it up with a Boston College performance that looked even worse. And maybe this is just who this team is. And when I say identity, I think the problem is this team lacks identity, especially on offense. So I think when you go like big picture stuff here, and there's going to be some conversations here that I want to save some of that for that Sunday show, but there's some fair conversations to have. The thing is, like, if the team, you get into the transfer and the high school stuff and the coaching positions and stuff like that, if this team was 2-0, we wouldn't be having these conversations. But because it is 0-2, I think it is fair to ask some tough questions. But I think when you look at the overall big picture, not much, if anything, got better from game one to game two. So my biggest concern is how much can you even fix during this bye week? If you have a question right now of leadership and buy-in from this team, and I think there's some guys that play harder than others. I think there's guys who play hard and maybe take some plays off. I think there is a leadership problem on this team. And I think there is questions about the culture right now. And I don't want to I don't want to go too far into that because I'm not in the locker room and I don't know that. But I think the way last year ended with the snub, with the players opting out of the bowl game, and I think Mike Norvell did probably push a lot of them to get out of the bowl game to go to the NFL because 10 NFL draft picks did a lot of good stuff for this program, but you couldn't back it up with this. You know, it looks like we lost our soul after the end of last week or last year. And that's just, it's hard, man. This team just, this is so unexplainable. This team does not look like a Mike Norvell team. It is not coached like a Mike Norvell team. And I don't even really think you can blame it all on the transfers. I mean, when you look back to the transfer portal, and I know I've been a fan of the transfer portal. It's been something that I thought they should utilize, you know, as a coaching staff. I think you need to accent your roster with transfers. And I think it's also fair to say that the transfer portal got us from where we're at to where we were the last 2 years at 23-4. If it wasn't for transfers, we might be where we're at now for the fifth year, maybe looking at a coaching change. So you can't completely knock the portal. But I think the difference is when you look at the transfers in the past, you had guys like a Jermaine Johnson, a Kier Thomas, a Jamie Robinson, who knew what they were walking into. They joined this team off of a 3-6 season. They walked into a team that was in the middle of a rebuild and didn't have a direction. Those guys knew they had to come into a disaster and work. And, you know, they turned themselves into NFL draft picks, so it worked out for them individually. The team only went 5-7, so maybe it wasn't, you know, that great from a team perspective, but they knew what they were coming. They knew what they were coming in to do. I think the fact that you had some guys threatening to leave, you know, and the rumor is that they were trying to squeeze FSU for money after a 13-1 season coming off an ACC championship, it just seems like a different mentality from a culture standpoint, and that's where my biggest concern comes from. But I don't think you can, and to be fair, a couple of those guys that did that are high school guys. Actually, a majority of those guys that did that are high school guys, so you can't really necessarily blame that on transfers. When you look at that defensive group, almost all of those guys were high school guys. And so I just think that the transfer portal is not 100% of the problem. But I think you also have to look at this program going forward needs to focus more on high school recruiting because, yeah, you can point at Clemson and say they go 100% high school and things aren't working out for them. Yeah, you can say teams like Ole Miss go heavy in the portal and things are working out for them. It worked out for us. Your best players the last few years were transfers. This roster is very heavily weighted towards the bottom with young talent when you look at those freshmen and sophomores. And I think that's why you do feel like this thing can get better if you can hold everybody together and keep that recruiting class there. But I think we're to a point now where you can't build your foundation off the transfer portal. It has to be high school. Because when you look at the Georgias, the Alabamas, I know they haven't won a national championship, but they've made the playoffs. Even in Ohio State, they accent their roster with transfers. Georgia still takes transfers. So does Alabama. But the majority of that foundation is built through high school prospects that have been brought in at a high level, you know, high-level prospects that have been brought in and developed over years. And so I think that's where Florida State has to get. Now, again, talking about things that wouldn't have been part of the conversation had you have been 2-0 instead of 0-2, it's hard to look at things with revisionist history because we didn't have the benefit of hindsight. We didn't have that preseason, but we have it now. I think now when you look back, I feel like this year should have been maybe you just accept the fact, put the redemption talk away, and just say that. And I understand Mike Norvell's job is to win games right now. It's not we're going to take our lumps this year. But I think you should have acknowledged that this should have been a growing year with a lot of the young guys. Then you go get a couple of accent pieces out of the portal to help those young guys have a good season. You know, go out and get the big money that you paid for some of these guys. Maybe you let some of the guys walk. Maybe you don't spend what they say that you spent on DJU, because there was a podcast this week by a credential media outlet that said you spent a lot of money on DJ. I don't know who approved that, but, you know, whatever. That's not my decision. But maybe you spend that money on some receivers to help Brock Glenn. And so that's just – but it's revisionist history. It's hard to say that because the transfers have got you to where you're at. But I will say when you look at some of the transfers from the past, again, they knew what they were coming into. They were strong culture guys. And they also were very productive guys for some of them for the most part. Like you look at a Jared Verse. You look at a Jamie Robinson, a Kier Thomas. You look at some of these other guys. You know, I know Trey Benson and Johnny Wilson wasn't, but they were physical freaks and things like that. And some of these guys are too. They're just not panning out. But they were productive, maybe just at a not so great team or a different level. You know, there you got a lot of, let's be honest, you got a lot of guys this year who couldn't see the field at better programs. And I think maybe, again, I don't know this for sure, but maybe this staff just kind of got a little lazy with their evaluations and assumed that these guys are coming from Alabama. They can play. They were four stars coming out of high school. They can play. And I think you've just missed on a few of your evaluations this year. It is what it is. They've had an insane hit rate in the portal for the past few years, and it just kind of didn't work out this way. So I don't think you can blame it all on the transfer portal. I think you can't just completely wash your hands of the portal going forward. You're going to probably need some transfers next year too. You're going to have to. Some of the transfers you brought in this year are multi-year guys. Some of the guys who you brought in that you thought were going to be good probably aren't going to the NFL now because of their performance this year. So you have to consider all that going forward too. But when you look at this team overall, getting back to the topic of the show, is that this team in this bye week needs to do some soul searching, because there's a lot of things that this team can't do right. But the one thing I think that's missing more than anything is a lack of fundamentals and a lack of leadership. When you look at the sideline during these games, this team is flat. You don't see any leaders. Even the leaders that you see, the team's not responsive to them. They don't look like they want to be encouraged. And, you know, I will say, like, when we went into that Boston College game, I had a pit in my stomach after I read the practice reports from the week before that, where you had they were saying the coaches kind of had to force the energy. It kind of looked sloppy. I was like, man, when I read that, I was like, man, I don't know that we're going to win this game, because it's year five. You're coming off a walk-off field goal loss against Georgia Tech that you felt like maybe was a fluke, that you were a better team than that should have been. You shouldn't be searching for motivation in a week like that against a team that you can beat at home at night in a night game. And so that was my concern. So I think really the overall thoughts from a big picture perspective is this staff has to figure out what they can and cannot do. And I know there's not a lot of that right now, but you have to find an identity. And that's going to really show up when we talk about the offense here in just a second. But you got to find leaders. You have to work on the fundamentals, man, because at the end of the day, this team can't catch, they can't tackle, and they have a hard time blocking. And that's the basics of football. That is not scheme related. That is not on the play calling. That is not on the coaches. I mean, yeah, they need to coach them better, but they're not coaching them to miss tackles and drop balls. And frankly, there has been some plays where guys just don't look like they give 100% effort. Now, I'm not saying they're not playing hard and they don't want to win, because I think these guys do want to win. I mean, it's embarrassing to lose. These guys are Division I athletes. They want to win games. They just don't look like it on Saturdays or Mondays. And so I think you have to get back to the fundamentals. And, you know, drop passes has been something that has really hurt this program for a long time. You look at the 2022 NC State game. That's pretty much what lost us that game. And no confidence in our kicker, who is our only bright spot this year. But I also think, you know, as we get into the offense, drop passes have been a problem. And we can start with DJU there. But again, like I said, from a big picture perspective, you got to find some leaders. You got to figure out what you can do. You have to form an identity. And you have to pick yourself off the mat and fix the fundamentals. That is, if you do nothing else, I think that could almost get you to a bowl game, just doing those few things right there. So let's talk about the offense. This offense lacks any kind of identity at all. In week zero, you ran the ball in spite of the pass, and it didn't work. In week one, you passed the ball in spite of the run. It didn't work. You got to find something that you can be good at, and you can't abandon either one, because frankly, right now, teams don't respect your pass game. I mean, you look at the one play where I think it was like third or second and 15, and Boston College had no deep safeties. They did not respect you at all. But there's some problems with this offense. I mean, we talked about it a couple episodes ago, where we kind of really dug into this team a little bit. You just don't have anybody special at wide receiver. You know, we thought Malik Benson could be that guy. I'm not saying that he can't, but maybe the targets were low for a reason. You know, maybe there's a reason that and Kentron Portier showed some flashes, but maybe there's a reason the rest of these guys didn't crack. You know, they got pushed down the depth chart with guys like Keon and Johnny and all that. You know, I like Kyle Morlock. I think he's a good guy. That's great to say, but he's dropped 75% of his passes this year. When you look at PFF, he had, I think, four drops in that game alone. And so the people around him, around DJ, are not helping him out at all. And I think that's fair to say when you talk about DJ. But when we start at that quarterback position, I think, it, again, DJ's not getting the job done. Look, let's not beat around the bush there. And I know people will talk about the NIL money and how much they paid him, and that you it's going to be hard to put him on the bench because it's going to you're going to have to admit you made a really expensive mistake. Look, Willie Taggart was a really expensive mistake, and we fired him after year two, and it took us a few years to pay that buyout out. I think when you look at expensive mistakes, you also have to understand that putting in a guy like Brock Glenn doesn't guarantee that you're going to fix the problem, but it brings spark and excitement. And spark and excitement will at least bring donations, which is what helps you kind of fix this thing. If you keep trotting DJ out there and it keeps looking as bad as it does, there's been so many rumors of people who are or want to stop their donations or want refunds, which I think is ridiculous. I'm not cutting off my Battles End donation. I might not be happy with the way things are panning out with the investments that we've made, but that doesn't mean I'm going to stop giving them the benefit of that when we've seen them do well in the past. But I think that's there's something to be said about that, about spark and excitement. I think when you look at DJ, there's a confidence issue there, guys. I mean, just big time. He does not look like he believes in himself, and this team does not look like they believe in DJ. I mean, you saw Kyle Morlock, who frankly ain't got a lot of room to talk because, like we talked about, he drops about 75% of the passes that are thrown his way. But after that terrible red zone stand where Florida State, he missed, the ball got batted, I'll give him that, but you're 6'4", man. Find a way to get around the defensive tackle. You missed the receiver in the back of the end zone on the first play. And then you the seam route to Kyle Morlock, you overthrew him. And then Darren Williamson is doing jumping jacks in the back of the end zone, and DJ throws it into the stands. So the accuracy, the reads are frankly terrible. There was, I know, one play where he tried to hit the running back coming out of the backfield, and he threw it in the dirt at his feet. And you can see Kyle Morlock in the background of the replay kind of holding his hands out like, man, I'm wide open, dude. You can't see me. Like, what is going on here? So DJ he's not a guy that's going to make average receivers better. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. You have an offensive line. I think the interior did okay with pass blocking this week, but your tackles got whipped. So he had to face pressure. He has receivers that kind of struggle to get open. There's some play calling issues that I have a problem with. You know, there was the one on the 4th and 5 where DJ throws the pick. It's 4th and 5. And when you go back and watch that tape, our first route, besides the hot route out of the backfield, has basically hit his emergency release there. We don't break out of our route to come back to the quarterback until around 8 to 12 yards. You know, one guy broke at 8 yards. The rest of them were 12 yards down the field. You need 5 yards. Can we not run a slant? Can we not run a 5-yard comeback? Can we not do something right around the sticks instead of having to put your quarterback back there for 3-4 seconds? Your offensive tackle gets whipped. He throws the ball under pressure. He throws it 15 yards downfield for whatever reason, I don't know, to a guy that wasn't even in that spot, and it gets picked. There's still some play calling that I think has to be changed. So I'm not taking all the fault off the coaches either. But the DJU experiment is not, it's failed, right? We can admit that. The problem I think is here is, and I will say too, that like the run has been a problem. You know, that his run has been a problem. The running game has been a problem. He's not helped out by the running game, but the passing game isn't good enough to back these defenses off to allow you to have some success in the run. But he's not getting help from anybody else. When you look at the PFF grades from that Boston College game, our receivers dropped 25% of his passes. It's not often he makes a good read. It's not often he makes a good throw. But when he does, they drop half of it. And so it's not 100% on DJ. He's not 100% of the problem. But he's a big part of it, and he has to take ownership in that. And so I also think when you talk about DJ, I think when you talk about making a switch here, because it's just not working. I think the problem is when you look at the camp reports, and if you don't want to believe anything that the credential guys say about what they see in camp, hey, I'm with you. You have every right not to believe anything that they've said. But when you look at DJ here, they have said that he has been, you know, more consistently better than Brock in camp. So I don't know that Brock's going to come in and go, you know, 28 to 30 for 303 touchdowns. I just don't think that's the case. But I think bringing in Brock does about three things. And I first want to touch on something. I went back last night and I watched that ACC championship game. And I was like, if we bring in Brock, what is this even going to look like? And I have to say, the drop passes reared their head in that too. And Mike Norvell, you know, he didn't let him throw a lot, but I think he had 23 attempts, only 8 completions. It was pretty terrible. But he let him throw the ball a little bit. And there were, I counted 5 drops in that game. So, I mean, he had all the star receivers, and they weren't helping him either. So I don't know that you're going to bring Brock into this game, and it's going to make the receivers stop dropping the ball. I mean, you hit him in the hands, and they can't catch it. That doesn't matter if it's DJ, Luke, me, you, whoever. It doesn't matter. If they can't catch the ball, it's not going to help your quarterback. If your offensive tackle is getting, you know, throwing lookout blocks left and right, that's not going to help anybody. But I think what you do see from Brock, and there was progression from that ACC championship game into that Georgia game. Now, I understand he was undermanned, overmatched, all that type of stuff. It wasn't great, but you saw his turnover worthy play rate went down, his big-time throw rate went up, and you saw some progress from game one to game two. So I have to imagine he's at least gotten better an entire year of having a full offseason, because we know he missed a lot of time last year during the 2023 season with injury. But I think what you do when you bring in Brock Glenn is a couple of things. And let's just say hypothetically, right, that I think DJ is going to start the Memphis game. I wholeheartedly do that. I think DJU is going to probably play the majority of that game, unless it just looks completely terrible. I think you need to start getting Brock packages at a minimum, because he is a better runner than DJ. He is faster. Now, he's not Jordan Travis, who apparently covered up a lot of issues, which we're going to touch on in a second, but he at least gives you a spark. I think he at least has that leadership mentality. He's more fiery. You know, we predicted on the show that Georgia game was going to be a 40-point blowout. But Brock was still very confident going into that game. You know, he has a nickname that I can't say on the show about his bravado. And I think he at least brings that. He at least has been around this team for a second year now. You know, he at least can run the ball and move it with his feet. You can give him RPO plays where he can get on the outside and he can run for 4, 10, 20, sometimes maybe even turn it into a 40-yard game, because they've seen it in practice. We've seen it in a couple of games. He has wheels. So I think you give the mobile aspect, which can help your offensive line, which can help get this running game going, which at least makes defenses respect that, because that's what made Jordan Travis so successful here is, you know, whether he wanted to run the ball or not, you had to respect that ability. Teams don't respect DJ running the ball because he's just slow and he can't make anybody miss. And he also is not running over anybody. So it's just not a good look at quarterback. So I think if you bring in Brock, you get that mobile ability, you get that kind of moxie in the pocket that I'm going to stand in here and take this shot, but I'm going to deliver the ball. You might reduce the sack numbers a little bit as well there. So I think there are plenty of reasons to bring in Brock. I just think you also have to understand that bringing in Brock isn't necessarily going to fix this offense, right? Because you still have offensive line that's struggling. You still have receivers that can't catch the ball consistently. But I think it at least gives a spark. And number two, let's say you bring in Brock for packages. I think it sends a message to DJ, right, that you're not getting the job done. And if you can't get this right, we're going to put you on the bench. Now, I think at some point throughout the season, maybe post that Clemson game, if you are completely out of everything, right, no bowl game, no nothing, because again, man, those 14 practices in that bowl game, if you are starting Brock and if Luke is playing at that point, that's important for their development for next season. And so I think you want to try and strive for that. As much as it's going to be a disappointment for us as a team and a staff, you want to try and strive for that. So I think you have to go with your best option. But I think at some point, DJ's not going to be here to help you fix this next year. Brock is. Luke is. So you have to go with the guys who are going to be here to help you fix it. And that goes for a couple of positions. I would like to see Elijah Moore get some looks. I would like to see LaWayne McCoy get some looks. We heard a lot about them in through camp. These guys aren't getting the job done. The veterans aren't getting the jobs done. Why can't we see these guys get a look? And so that is a problem too, right? I think you need to look at certain positions. But I think you have to do what you can to try and make that bowl game, if nothing else, for your recruiting, for your team morale, for just that extra development, that practice. But I also want to touch on Luke for a second. I know a lot of people want to see Luke Cromenhawk come in. I do too. I think, let me rephrase that. I think Luke Cromenhawk is the future of this quarterback room. No disrespect to Brock, no disrespect to Tramiel Jones who's coming in. I think Luke is going to be the savior of the quarterback position, if you want to say that. I think he's the best quarterback you have on your roster right now. The reason I don't say bring him in, and maybe he gets some, I hope to see him in Charleston Southern. I hope to see him if we make a bowl game and things like that. Man, I don't know that you bring a true freshman out there in a offense that can't run the ball. They can't block it up consistently to where he could get hurt. You could also ruin him by having just a terrible showing. So that doesn't always happen. And I mean, freshmen come out all the time and play good, but I worry about stunting his development more than anything because, you know, we always talk about like a bird in the hand, a bird in the bush. That's your bird in the bush right there. And you need him to be good going forward. So I don't know that you risk it on kind of a wash of a season. But I certainly don't think it's unfair to say that he shouldn't get a look when the opportunity presents itself. So I don't think you're going to see a change at quarterback, but I think you need to see Brock get packages. And I think if the season goes completely off the rails and a bowl is out of the picture and everything like that, or DJ just by after that Clemson game, man, it just has not gotten any better at all, with in mind the fact that guys aren't helping around him, then I think you got to make the change for the guy who's going to be here to help you fix it in the future. You know, and even for running back, man, I was excited about Roydell coming into this. I'm not saying he's a bad back. He just really can't make anybody miss. He's kind of a one-trick pony. There's probably a reason that his best game at Alabama was South Florida in a game that they almost lost. I'm still impressed with Cam Davis. Yes, he had the big pass drop in the Georgia Tech game, but when you watch that Boston College game, there was one run where typically you see Florida State, when things get bottled up, they go down, they get pushed backwards, things like that. Our running backs go down with a shoelace tackle. There was one where I was watching, and you just saw the pile just keep continuing going forward and forward and forward, and it pushed for 3 or 4 yards. And out of the bottom of that pile comes Cam Davis. So I think that's another position where you could see some young guys get a look. You know, where's Sam Singleton? I would like to see him as well. And that's not saying that Lawrence Toafili is playing bad, but, man, he's had some really questionable pass drops, which has been one of his strengths. I don't think you can take Jalen Lucas off the field because he's probably your best offensive player right now. I think it's fair to give the young guys a look at tight end. Kyle Morlock, like I said, has dropped 75% of his passes. I think he had 4 drops on his own in that Boston College game. Where I would like to see what Amari Williams can do. I would like to see what Landon Thomas can do. Just give him a look at some point. And I think if you get later in the season and things are awash, I think you should see that because those are going to be the guys that are going to help you. Yeah, I think when you look at the offensive line, I have some major concerns here. Now, I don't think certain positions are playing terrible, but they're not playing good either. I mean, there's a lot of times where you see Maurice getting blown back off the ball against Boston College's defensive line. What's that going to look like against Clemson? You know, what's that going to look like against Miami? You had Darius Washington just got whipped on Monday night, and that's not good because he was supposed to be your best offensive line. I think Richie Leonard's playing well enough that you don't need to take him out. I think Keandre Jones is playing well enough that you don't need to take him out. I don't think you have another center that's good enough to take Maurice Smith out. You got to figure out something at the tackle position. And I'm not saying you should bench Darius Washington. And I do think that when you get Byers back, which he's been inconsistent at times too, that's probably a better option at least than Rob Scott. So maybe you can see a path to that getting a little bit better there. But I think there is a really fair question to ask here. And when we get into of how this can improve, one of the main things to me is how much of a difference does Alex Atkins make? I mean, if he comes back and this offense all of a sudden starts looking better and the offensive line is in sync and things look better, man, give that guy a raise because he's a big part of this offense. He is the offensive coordinator. And do keep in mind, this offense has been atrocious. You've been without your offensive coordinator, despite Mike Norvell being the play caller. That probably puts a lot more load on him every week. But I think there are some fair questions to ask of that position. Why have all these senior guys that have 200 starts combined the last 2 years, none of them are going to the NFL? I think it's also fair to say that why are none of these high school guys that we brought in that big 2022 class able to see the field, at least to try them out and see what they have? First off, half of them have transferred out of the program. Julian Armella is in year 3, can't get on the field. I know Lucas Simmons hasn't been playing American football for a long time, so maybe he's not ready. You know, Jalen Early, another guy that you're not seeing a whole lot from. And I think that's a fair criticism. I think Jordan Travis probably covered up a lot of stuff. Maybe even got, you know, Atkins a raise in there because of his mobile ability, because this team has not been able to run the ball without Jordan Travis. This team, man, when I went back and watched that ACC championship game, that offensive line got their lunch ate. Brock was getting pounded in that game. And when he wasn't getting pounded, he was running for his life. It was a really poor showing by that offensive line. And so when you see this offensive line without Jordan Travis, and when we talk about Jordan Travis, this staff gets credit for developing him. So again, you still have to start asking who's next in line, because you've seen different guys. You know, I know Chuba got hurt. I know Duffy transferred out, couldn't really crack the thing there. I think Tate was kind of a, look, Willie didn't take a quarterback for 2 years. We got to get somebody. He was Mike's first quarterback commit. You just took him. I don't think he would be any better at quarterback just on the way that, you know, what he's doing at Southern Miss right now. That's another conversation. So I think you have your answer at quarterback. It's just maybe not ready to be on the field yet. But neither is the guy you got on the field either. But this offensive line has got some red flags, man. And the fact that you don't have any guys ready to go. I mean, look at LSU. Will Campbell, I believe, was like a freshman All-American tackle. You know, you got Georgia that can bring in freshmen. You got Clemson that has freshman guys who are ready to start. And yet it's year three, and we can't get any of these guys on the field? I think those are fair questions to ask. So, again, we'll see how things look when Alex Atkins comes back. But if it doesn't get any better, I think there's some fair questions to be asked this offseason about what are we doing at that position as well. I mean, if you have a terrible season, and again, do keep in mind now that when we talked about this before, we talked about how a lot of the past teams, like the Auburn with Cam Newton, the LSU with Joe Burrow, they took a big step back after those quarterbacks and they lost some big pieces. So it's fair to think this team is going to have a step back. But if you step back to 4-8, 2-10, that you have to start asking some tough questions. So I think that's fair to say. I think when to sum up the offense, man, I think you have to find an identity. You have to figure out, you have to balance the run with the pass. You have to figure out how to pass the ball efficiently enough to open up the run game in some sort of way. Whether that means bringing in Brock Glenn for a few packages or not, I think you got to find something to happen, because at least he gives you a mobile ability. And so I think that is going to be what the offense has to do here. You have to clean up the fundamentals. You have to catch the passes, man. If DJ can't throw the ball, but when he does, you drop it, it's never going to get any better. So you have to work on catching the balls that hit you in the hands. You just got to. And then when you flip over to the defense, I think with the offense, you could maybe see like, okay, your interior guys are pretty good. You got some young running backs that are okay. And let's be honest, they completely abandoned the run in this game. I think they had 2 or 3, maybe 4 running back carries in the first half. You only ran like 6 or 8 plays in the first half to begin with. So you can't just abandon things each week. You have to stay balanced to a degree. But I also will say that, like, when you look over at this defense, you have to blame the offense for a little bit there as well. You know, I had a stat where they showed with 10 minutes left in the second quarter, Florida State had run 6 plays for 8 yards with 2.5 minutes of time of possession. Boston College had run 28 plays for 161 yards and 16.5 minutes, or almost 17 minutes of possession. So the offense is not helping the defense out. We talk about we can't get touchdowns. We can't get first downs. You can't give this defense a chance to catch their breath. And we've seen this year, they don't rotate as heavily as they did last year because they just don't have the depth to do it like we thought they would. Now, they do rotate some guys in, but it's not quite like they did last year. But this defense, I think, you know, when we talk about the offense, you can maybe see something here, something there, one player change, maybe you make a quarterback change, maybe that helps. This defense is an unmitigated disaster all the way across the board. And I think after the season is over, you are going to have to make some changes, some wholesale changes on that side of the ball. You're going to have to make some tough decisions, have some tough conversations. You know who I'm talking about from a lot of different perspectives. It's time to revisit some things. I know these guys. I know, you know, Odell's not coaching these defensive tackles and stuff like that to look like this. But if these guys aren't taking the coaching and you don't have these guys, you know, blue chip high school dominant guys coming in behind them, because that's really in the trenches, that's what you need. You can scheme up all you want, man. But in the trenches, it's X's and O's versus Jimmies and Joes. And it's always the Joes that are going to win. Or I don't know, maybe the Jimmies are the good ones. Who knows? But man, you just got to make some changes on that side. But we're going to talk about that more on Sunday. But they lack physicality. They lack communication, and the tackling is atrocious. I think when you look at this defense, the basic fundamentals are the worst part. I can't even tell you that the scheme is the bad part, because the fundamentals are so bad it's hard to even know. Teams don't have to throw on you. They don't respect, you know, they need to change their mentality, though. Now, that might be a little bit hard this week when you go into that Memphis game, because it is going to be a passing team. So maybe you don't just start bringing the heat this week. But if you have a good rushing team, man, you got to bring some more pressure. You're going to have to start sending some guys. For goodness sakes, Adam Fuller, do what they're doing to our offense. We cannot run the ball. Meanwhile, we're giving up 200 rush yards a game. Steal their game plan. Connor Stallions that defense. You know, do something to change the style up, because what you're doing is not working. These teams are not successfully throwing on you. They're running all over you. Why are we not selling out against the run? Those are the questions that I have. But, man, the fundamentals have to be fixed. I think there is somewhat of a lack of, I don't want to say a lack of effort, even though there are some clips that I have clipped. That look poor effort. I mean, there's some tackling where guys look like they're literally just kind of patting guys on the butt as they walk by, and they're not wrapping up. They're not willing to put their body on the line to try and take these guys out like other teams are doing for you. Against you. But I do think there is a little bit of a lack of want to by some of these guys, because we've seen some of these guys play better than they have. And so, and some of that is at certain positions, because if you watch and you go back and watch film, and I always watch the film, I usually try and watch it, you know, every play multiple times, sometimes slow down at different speeds. There's a lot of guys that stand around while the play is still going, while teams are pushing. You know, you'll see the offense come in and jump in and push their guy forward for 3 or 4 yards. Meanwhile, some of our guys are just standing around with their hands on their hips, watching everybody else make the tackle. Man, the fighting off blocks is frankly pathetic in a lot of these positions. You know, guys just catch blocks. They don't bring the physicality. They don't really particularly look like they're working hard to get off of that block. I honestly question, and let me say this first. I don't think this defensive line is getting any help from the linebackers. The linebackers are the worst part of this defense by far. That we have acknowledged. I don't know that this defensive line touched a weight in the offseason, because it surely doesn't look like it. They get stood up, which I know they don't get coached to do by Odell. They do not get coached to come off the line and stand straight up and get pushed back. They don't. But it happens almost every time we run the ball. The line of scrimmage gets moved 2 to 3 yards before the running back even gets to the line of scrimmage. It looks like these guys didn't even lift a weight. You know, and I think when you look at the defensive line, I think Josh Farmer has some things there that you can build with. You know, we saw him be good in the past. We didn't see Daryl Jackson be good in the past. We saw him be okay at Miami. They said that he wasn't all that great. You know, he played in that Georgia game. I get it was his first game of the season. Wasn't really effective there. Now you're kind of seeing that carry over into this year. And to be honest, I think the staff kind of knows it. When you look at last game, he only got 34 snaps compared to Josh Farmer at 45. When you saw them bring in a rotational piece, it was mostly for Daryl Jackson. So I think they now understand that he's just not the guy they need there. And I think Daniel Lyons should be your starter. If you want to talk about benching people, Daryl Jackson can be the first one. I think he can be a rotational piece for you, because he is just a massive body. Maybe that sends a message. And frankly, when you talk about benching people and hurting feelings, man, when we talk about culture and all that stuff, and again, we're going to get more into that on Sunday. Look, if you bench these guys to send a message and they quit, get off the roster. If you're not willing to come in here and fight and be a part of this and want to make this better, go do it. Go sit on your couch and watch, because you have to find guys that are willing to fight and guys that are willing to put in the work and play hard every single play, because this is a team sport. And one of the biggest things that I see that's wrong with this team, outside of just a pure lack of fundamentals, is a lack of team continuity. There are so many. There was a play that I had a clip that I, you know, maybe we'll get to the point where we can share clips on here someday. We have audio only podcast listeners, so sometimes that's hard to do. But you can see on a run play, the one where Trayshon Ward cuts back on a quarterback option read and goes for like 15 yards. You see Pat Payton gets washed down on the inside by the offensive tackle. Doesn't look like he's given 100% effort. Cam Riley, who's supposed to have backside contain because the other two linebackers fired on the play side, Cam Riley's supposed to have backside contain. He gets sucked into the play because he's not playing disciplined football. He opens up a wide open rushing lane. It goes for 10 yards. Conrad Hussey comes by and basically gives him a pat on the back as he runs by. one of the most piss poor excuses of a tackle attempt I've ever seen. And it goes for like 15 yards. So when you have a lot of guys who aren't doing their job together, the other 75% of the defense did their job on that play. But because two or three guys didn't do it at the same time, the whole defense looks bad. So you got to have, you got to find guys who are going to give their all every play, who, and you got to figure out how to make this team play together, man. It's just so crazy. Now, I think when you look at just how disjointed they look, and I think when you do look at that interior group, there are a lot of double teams. There are, because now they lose a lot of one-on-ones too. I can't take that credit away from them, but there are a lot of double teams on an interior group because I feel like they think that your DNs and your linebackers aren't effective. So if they can take out your defensive tackles, they can do pretty much what they want. And that brings us to the defensive ends. Man, I love Marvin Jones. I love what he did for this program. We've had him on the show before. He's a friend of the show. I love the Laser Foundation that they're doing with Micanopy 1851. I love everything that they're doing. I'm not saying that Marvin Jones Jr. can't be a great player. I'm not saying that he doesn't have the body type to be that. I'm not saying that he's not a great kid. He's not effective at all. He has no impact on the game whatsoever. I don't think you can keep putting him out there. That's not a I'm not criticizing him as a person, but he has no impact on the game at all. And I think you have to swap him with Sione. I think Sione has to be your starter. He's not perfect. He's undersized. He gets pushed down a lot. Or you know, it's hard for him when he's undersized to fight his way off a linebacker. But he has been in position more often. He has more impact on the game than Marvin Jones has, Jones Jr. has. And I think when you look over at the other side with Pat Payton, he is actually, I have mixed emotions on Pat Payton right now. I think he is suffering from not having Jared Verse on the other side. Again, where you have those big, powerful defensive ends like a Jared Verse, who, like we always joke on the show, if he can't get a sack or if he can't get into the backfield because of the offensive tackle, he'll sack the quarterback with the offensive tackle. And you just don't have those guys this year. I think Pat Payton actually is in position a lot, man. He gets in there. He gets inside. His tackling is absolutely atrocious. He has had a 27 tackle grade from PFF in the first two games. God, that's garnet red on the color sheet that goes green, blue to green to yellow to red. That is garnet red. That is maroon. That is terrible. His tackling is atrocious. So you have to figure that out. Now, he's a lighter weight defensive end. I don't expect him to be able to just push an offensive tackle around, but he's actually in position. And I do question how much of that is him playing contain against mobile quarterbacks when you look at Haynes King and Thomas Castellanos. So I think next game will be a good judgment for Pat Payton. When you have a quarterback who can run, the guy does run, Preston Stone, but whichever one of their quarterbacks, that might be Memphis' quarterback. I mean, SMU's quarterback. But when you look at their quarterback, he's not the most mobile guy. So we'll find out that as well. But this defensive line, unless they're playing contained, they don't get much pressure on the quarterback. And now some of that may be because they haven't, I know that's hard to read when they don't drop back a lot because they don't have to throw the ball. But in this next one, they're going to drop back and pass a lot. And so you need to see pressure from this defense. And if they can't do it in that game, I think it's time to start questioning some things of maybe some personnel switching and stuff like that. But I do think Daniel Lyons needs to be your starter on the defensive line. I think Josh Farmer is good enough to keep rolling out there. I will say, at least it looks like he plays hard most of the time. I mean, I know some people, you know, may have a different opinion on that. But if you watch the film, he will run guys down from the backside. He does at least try a little bit. I just think it's not that Marvin Jones ain't trying. He's just not effective in the game right now. And I also question, like, I don't know if it's an injury or not. We haven't seen or heard anything about it. Where is Durajai? You know, we thought he could be a guy that could have an impact. Where's Jaden Jones, a JUCO guy who's like 6'6", 260? Where are these guys at? I mean, if your players in the game aren't effective, how come these other guys can't even get a look? So that's some questions that I have as well. Just on that defensive line. But I think if you start Sione, I think if you bring in Daniel Lyons as your starting defensive tackle opposite of Josh Farmer, and Pat Payton can just, man, you got to figure out how to make a tackle. If he can do that, I think this defensive line is not going to be good. I'm not saying they're going to be good. Man, talk about watching that 2023 ACC championship game. Were we ever blessed with a defensive line, man. Those guys were dominant. And it wasn't a whole lot of the guys that we see on the field this year. That's the problem. But you can be serviceable. I would at least say that. And then when you look behind him at linebacker, it didn't get any better. You know, it didn't get any better from Georgia Tech. And you didn't have Omar Graham on the field. So that wasn't even necessarily the problem. Now, I don't know that it got significantly worse, but it didn't get a whole lot better. I think DJ Lundy's still a decent linebacker. I mean, he's just, his biggest problem is he's not a great linebacker. He's not athletic like we saw with Tatum Bethune and Kalen DeLoach. So they can't cover in space. That is Blake Nicholson. He's the only one who can really do that. And you have to have Blake Nicholson on the field a lot. He has to be your starter because he's the only one that can cover. But I think when you look at – we actually saw Juice Crier in this game, and I don't think he was bad. I thought he actually – like, the problem is when you see our linebackers play, they play side to side most of the time, unless it's a straight, like, obvious run play. They don't trigger downhill very often. They wait for the play to come to them. On pass plays, their team's slow to react at some points, and that was something that we saw on those wheel routes that they kept hitting with the back out of the backfield, and it worked dang near every time. They're just they can't switch off defenders, and the linebackers just react kind of late. So I think you have something in Blake. I think you have something in DJ Lundy, and I think you need to see more of Juice Crier. I don't know, and to keep in mind, we're also kind of playing how this thing can get better a little bit there as well too. But again, man, the secondary is so hard to read because you haven't seen a whole lot of teams that throw the ball heavily because, frankly, they just haven't had to. But they haven't been perfect either. I mean, their tackling has been poor as well. Conrad Hussey in that last game, who, by all means, I was the guy who wanted him to start, had a 27.2 tackle grade. AZ had a 38.8 tackle grade. Devontae Brown was at 39.4. I don't necessarily think Shaheem is playing bad, but he's not playing as good as we expected him to. But a lot of that's because he's basically a fill-in linebacker because the linebackers aren't getting the job done. So the secondary, really my only complaint with those guys is really two things, right? I think one, the tackling just has to get better. It just has to. But two is, and this goes for the entire defense, is the communication. It looks like the lack of physicality and the communication looks like to be the two biggest problems with this defense. These guys cannot pass off players, pass off assignments to save their life. Any kind of pre-snap motion throws them for a loop. They look confused. You know, they have trouble getting lined up. Half the time when they're lining up, you see them looking over at each other with their hands up. Like they don't know where to be. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. Guys are trying to push guys the other way and maybe they're not moving. You know, I've seen Grady Kelly come in and you know, he plays hard. He's just not really that good. And that's just something that you have to accept. And so you have some weaknesses on this defense, but there's so many miscues that I think if they could clean up their tackling and if they could clean up their communication, you could see this defense be okay. Because if you fix those two things and you had any sort of life on offense, there's a good chance this team is 1-1, maybe even 2-0. But you got to fix that stuff, man. I mean, the wheel route was a perfect example. There's so many examples. I think two wheel routes went, one went for a touchdown, one went for a big gain, where you have two or three guys covering one guy and the running back out of the backfield was completely uncovered because they didn't understand the assignment. They didn't pass guys off well. So those are the things, man, you got to get back to the basics in this bye week and you have to fix the fundamentals before you do anything else. And I think that could lead to a lot of improvement for this team. Now, again, like I said, you have to understand that this is probably going to be a battle for bowl eligibility type of year. We're just trying to figure out how can they salvage this season. I think you need to make some personnel switches on both sides of the ball. I think you need to settle in on some guys as well. I think you need to get some guys back. I'm really, really hoping that after this bye week, Hakeem Williams comes back because I think that is one of your biggest hopes, and hope ain't a strategy. DJU's probably not even going to hit him half the time when he's there. But I think that's one of your biggest opportunities to get better on offense, right? Is work on some things this week. And then you also have to mention, too, when we talk about how things can get better, Alex Atkins will be back after this Memphis game. He won't be here for this game. He's missing three games. This is game three. But you feel like Memphis is a team you could win. And then you have your offensive coordinator back. You have your offensive line coach on the sideline who can, you know, I mean, I know the assistant is doing well filling in. Maybe not, because it doesn't look great. But there's nothing like your true position coach. And Alex Atkins, we know, will get in that tail. You know, he will chew on them guys. So I think you need that back on the sideline. I just think you do. And so that's some of the paths that I see to get better. Now, again, the quarterback position and what they actually do is going to be up in the air. But because I don't think Mike Norvell is going to punt on this season or DJU immediately, but I think it has to be brought into question. I think you have to give Brock different looks. I think these things are all fair questions to ask. And I think at some point he will, because again, he's not going to be here next year to help you fix it. And so just, you know, when you look at some stats that are alarming, again, 25% drop passes in that game. That does not help DJU out. We have seven significant, these are just going to drive home some of the things that I just talked about. Seven significant contributors with a missed tackle percentage over 20%. Six of those last week. It's the fundamentals right there. You're dropping half the passes that you do make, and you can't tackle half the opportunities that you do get to bring guys down. This team is giving up 227 rush yards per game. That is mind-boggling. That is one of the worst rushing defenses in the country. Would have been one of the worst last year, too. You have to figure out a way. You have to get these guys. You have to stop letting these linebackers play out of position. You have to get these guys to fire off the ball low and win these battles up front. I don't know that you can do that. I don't know that you can just flip a switch and do that. But this is not what they're being coached to do. So you have to figure that out. You know, I think maybe you should have let Randy Shannon walk after last week, the bye week, and then let Ernie Sims take over coaching. But, you know, again, man, I don't know. I'm not the coach. I don't get paid $10 million to fix this. I'm just giving you my thoughts on the process here. But 227 yards when their teams aren't throwing on you, why are we not bringing eight guys into the box and sending six to seven of them? I just don't get it. The other teams are literally showing you how to stop the run, and yet you're not doing the same thing, and you're getting ran through. You know, it's just you're getting ran through like Taco Bell, you know, on a heavy drinking night or something like that. It's not going well. And so you got to do, you just have to change up your style, man. Now, again, like I said, Memphis is a pass-heavy team, so I understand if you don't do it this game. But if you have another rush-heavy team with a mobile quarterback, you got to make the adjustments. This team is 8 of 26 on third down, 30.8%. That is terrible. And they're not always in good third down situations because you can't move the chains on first and second down. If DJ can't run the ball, that I thought would be at least a decent part of this offense, and it's not. So you have to figure out something, man. You got to figure out something, how to get these guys, the playmakers in space, hopefully getting Byers back will help you with that as well. Maybe getting Atkins back can help you with that as well, because I will go out to say, and I don't know this for sure, but I'm sure Atkins is probably, you know, they like to use these weird kind of subtitles now in college football, like a pass game coordinator, like we saw with Joe Brady at LSU. I'm sure that Alex Atkins, while he wasn't the play caller, was probably your run game coordinator. So maybe that helps when you get him back, at least figure out what you're doing in the run game. But, I mean, this offense just looks bad. And, you know, you right now have a 33.3% touchdown percentage in the red zone. Last week was an utter failure in the red zone, where you had three golden opportunities to get a touchdown, and you pissed away all of them. I'm sorry. We're a family-friendly show. I'm not trying to say anything sideways here, but you did. I mean, you wet the bed on all three of them. You just made crucial mistakes, and a lot of it was because of your quarterback. So you got to figure out a way to score touchdowns in the red zone. I know we talk a lot about these kickers and how great they've been, and they are the only bright spot on this team, but you got to figure out how to get points in the end zone, because with your defense struggling, 3 points just isn't going to cut it, and I think you have to accept that going forward. And right now, you're running for 2.3 yards for carry. You just have to figure this out. You have got to figure out how to get better. We have 7 3 and outs and 18 drives. It's just, man, it's not. We have a 43.8% completion percentage on throws over 10 yards. When you look at that, at the games that we played, the two so far, your stuffed runs, which are 0 yards or less, 23% in this game, 23% in the first game. So a quarter of your rushes are going for 0 to -yards. In the Georgia Tech game, stopped runs, which are 2 yards or less, in that Georgia Tech game, you had 31% of your runs went for 2 yards or less. In this game, 47%. Now, again, you did not run the ball a whole lot in this game, but 47% of your runs, almost half your runs went for 2 yards or less. You cannot successfully run the ball. And again, man, I think that comes into question where you think about giving Brock a look because of his mobile aspect, because we saw what Jordan Travis did for this offense in the past. I think you have some honest questions about maybe you give some of the younger guys a look. Like, is Armella that bad? Because what we see on the field is not that good. And so I don't have the answer to that, but I think you have to figure out some way to actually move the ball on the ground. And I know you're running it into loaded boxes, so you have to be able to throw the ball, but you can't really do that successfully, and you can't catch it when you do. So, like, this is the problem with this team. You don't have, like, here's something we can do, here's something we can't do, let's stick to this while we figure this out. You can't really do either. And so you got to find an identity on this offense because, again, like we said, you didn't really throw the ball successfully in week one and you didn't run it successfully in week two, but you allowed DJ to throw the ball 42 times in this game. So you just don't have an identity through the first 2 weeks. And I think that's something they need to work through on this bye week. Your explosive plays are only at 9% in both games. And again, man, you're giving up 56% of third down conversions. Opponents have scored on 7 of 8 trips to the red zone with every score being a touchdown. The Georgia Tech field goal, as we know, was not in the red zone. You got to figure this out because you just can't. You can't go 0-for in the red zone for touchdowns and then allow the other team to score touchdowns every time. You just can't. You're going to lose that battle. And so I really think when we kind of start to bring this home, just looking at the assessment of where I'm at after 2 weeks, realizing that this team is what we saw in week zero. That was not a fluke, but that doesn't mean it's not entirely fixable. Man, you just got so much to fix. I don't know. My problem is I don't know how fast you can fix things significantly, because you need a significant fix, because here's the problem. This schedule is only about to get harder. You know, Memphis is probably as good of a team as Boston College and Georgia Tech. Cal is not a great team, but they have a really good running back named Jay Knott, who ran for almost 1,400 yards last year, despite being limited in 3 games. And you can't stop anything on the ground. So who's to say that guy doesn't run through you and you end up losing that game because you can't stop one guy? So like that, those are the things that concern you. SMU, you got to go on the road against a team that we'll see how they look going forward after that Nevada game. They were projected to be pretty decent. And then you get Clemson. And so, like, it's only going to get harder from here. So you have to just find some kind of identity that you can keep working on. You have to find the personnel who are willing to get in there and play hard. You have to go back on the film and just look at these guys and say, look, man, if you're not even going to try, I saw they brought in KJ Kirkland in this game. So they are at least giving some of the younger guys a look, and maybe you need to continue to do that. You know, Kentron Portier is a guy at receiver. Maybe if you have him back, maybe if you have Hakeem back, and I mean, Portier's still here, but you play him more often. You get Hakeem back. Maybe you have some things there. I mean, I don't think Ja'Kai's bad. He's obviously kind of your consistent staple. You got to hit him. You got to throw the ball to him and hit him and then catch it. So you have some things I think that you can build off of, but the problem that you have right now with offense is it all starts at quarterback. And when DJ, he's played so poorly, but when he does do good, and again, man, when you go back and watch those reads, there are so many times where there are guys open and he's just not throwing it to them. You know, again, man, there was one play. It was another crucial third down where we threw it to, it looked like a slant to Jalen Lucas across the middle on 3rd and 5. First off, Jalen Lucas, he stopped on the route. The DB basically just almost, it could have almost been a pass interference because he just ran into him because he stopped on the route. The throw was behind him. So that was bad there. But then on the other side of the field, you had set up a wide receiver screen with a running back. And so with Keziah Holmes, Boston College, the guys over there, you had one guy who was playing a little bit up close. The other guy was 8 yards off the field or off of the running back, playing soft coverage. Kyle Morlock actually blocked it up well, and the receiver on that side, I forget who it was, actually blocked it up well. It would have been a first down had you got the ball out to the running back. But then when I replayed it 2 or 3 times, I looked over. DJU's head never even turned that way. Never even looked for the screen. And maybe the screen was a decoy. I don't know. I don't know what I'm not in their helmet. I don't know their play calling. I don't know that. But it was there, and he misses so many reads and so many throws that your offense is just going to struggle until you get the quarterback position figured out. And again, like, I'm not going to say that Brock Glenn is the answer, but he gives you a spark. He gives you some hope. He gives you the mobile ability. And like I said, I just don't think this team has any faith in DJU right now. I really don't. It just looks like they don't want to play hard for him because they know that he's struggling. Now, there is also, at the same time, I want to give him credit. He made a couple of really nice throws. He had a really long pass to Jalen Lucas again across the middle. That was a really good throw. He has made some throws. So I think when you talk about all that, and then you look at the defense, like I said, man, the defense just has to figure out the fundamentals and some of the loafing. It just, let's be honest, let's call it like it is. I don't think they're not playing hard. They're just not playing 100% consistently. But I think if you can get that defense on the same page and get the communication right, maybe a different guy needs to wear it. Maybe Shaheen Brown needs to be the green dot guy who's calling the plays and calling the shots out there on the field or something. If they could just clean up the fundamentals and get the right personnel in there, like we said, Daniel Lyons, Sione Loholeha, Blake Nicholson, you see more Juice Crier, less of Cam Riley, because Cam Riley's one of the worst ones at reacting to things. And I hate to say that about him. I'm not trying to talk bad about him, but man, some of these plays are like, dude, what are you doing? I mean, where are you going? This is basic football. What are you doing? And so I think if you can clean those things up, I think this team can still win 6 to 7 games and make a bowl. I really do think they can, because you have good special teams and you got some teams that are beatable on the schedule. Because again, we got to see what everybody looks like. So those are just kind of really some of the takeaways. Then you get Atkins back. Look, I don't know that Alex Atkins is going to be the missing key that unlocks this team, but it surely can't hurt. He's your offensive coordinator. It can't hurt. So I think if you get him back, that's at least going to help to a degree get these things right. And so with that being said, guys, I'm trying to be somewhat positive in a very negative time when there's not much positive to talk about. And it's not good. The problem for me is right now, I don't see a path for this team to get significantly better in a short amount of time, knowing you have some tough games coming. But you do have a bye week, and I don't know how much you can fix. I don't know how hard you can push these guys if they're not fully committed, if you know what that means. And that's not saying they're not, because again, I'm not in the locker room. They're out there going through practice, out there working and doing the things that they're doing. So I can't say that for sure. But, you know, I don't know that you can give this team Mickey Andrews type of tough love. I don't know that they're not going to quit on you if you do that. At the same time, like we mentioned, if you can't take that, get off the roster. We got guys who can. We got guys who can come in and take your spot. So I think this bye week, Florida State has to do some soul searching, and they have to focus on the fundamentals, man. I would not even use the word Memphis this week. I wouldn't. I would use, like, man, we're going back to peewee football, where we learn to tackle, we learn to catch the ball, we learn to alignment and assignment. That's what they always say, alignment and assignment, effort and execution. Those are the big things you have to do, alignment and assignment, effort and execution. And I think if you can just get those things squared away, this team can make it to a bowl game. The problem is, if you come out against Memphis and you look like you did the first 2 weeks and nothing got better, I don't see a way that you can fix this before more losses stack up and the season is completely out of the window. And at that point, I think that's when you go youth movement. I think that's when Mike Norvell has to accept that this just isn't going to work. Some of the evaluations on these transfers just were off. They were wrong. And this team is not going to play well together for whatever reason. I don't know if that's a problem in the locker room. I don't know if they don't like playing together. Maybe just they don't have enough leadership. They don't know how to respond to adversity, because we know they don't know how to win yet because they haven't shown it. You got to have some guys step up and lead, man. And I had heard some things where, like, DJ Lundy in the postgame presser, you know, kind of had some things to say where he sounds like maybe he's a leader. But, man, you got to step into that role. You just have to. Someone has to step up on this team. And so I'm hoping some soul searching during this bye week and some focusing on the fundamentals will help this team at least get better going forward. But, man, I mean, we'll see. And if it doesn't get better, I think you have to go youth movement, because once the experiment has failed and you have nothing left to play for, you know, here's the problem. You still got 10 games to play. Regardless, they're going to line it up and play. They're not just, you can't just take your ball and go home and say, I don't want to play anymore. It doesn't work that way. But you got to play the games. And if you're to the point where you can't make a bowl, which means you can't make the playoffs or the ACC championship, again, I'm not saying you're going to make that. Those are already out the window. I get it. But if you're looking like you're going to win 2 to 5 games and not make a bowl somewhere in that range, then I think it's time to shift your entire focus, and you need to start seeing what you got and getting experience for those guys who are going to be here to help you fix it. Look, you tell the upperclassmen, man, thanks, love you, mean it. I'm glad you came here. We'll let you rotate in. The ones that earn playing time can still get rotational snaps. The ones that don't, you can ride the pine. It is what it is. That's when I think you go youth movement, when there is no hope left to even make a bowl. And that way you can at least show the recruits coming in that, look, we're playing these young guys. You'll have an opportunity for playing time early on. Because let's face it, man, what do we say? Like, I think 20 of 22 of your starters are like upperclassmen. So some of them, a lot of them aren't going to be here next year. And you need to focus on the guys who are going to be here to help you fix it. I don't know that we're to that point yet. I would start making some changes, or at least bring some of these guys in to start working them in. So when you do go to the youth movement, you at least have that experience. You at least have guys who aren't getting their very first snap against, say, Miami or Notre Dame or something like that. I think that is important to start working in an Elijah Moore, to start working in, you know, a Brock Glenn or something like that. I think that's important to do. But I don't think Mike Norvell is going to make the wholesale changes right now. I think because he doesn't want to admit that he's going to punt on the season and things can't get better. I think he's going to want to keep trying to get better with what he's got. But I think at some point he does have to make the tough decision. And then that's going to lead into some tough decisions in this offseason from a staff and a personnel perspective, which, again, me and Michael will get into that on Sunday. So just wanted to come back with you guys and share some thoughts. Now that I've had some days to process some things here, I mean, it's not good. Like, there's no way to paint this picture as being good, but you can see some little semblance of ways that this team can at least get to a bowl, can at least hold this recruiting class together, and can at least start getting guys experience for next year who are going to be here to help you fix it. But again, man, I think at some point you have to just pull, you know, the emergency release, the ejecto seat, and you have to just kind of park some of these guys on the bench, and you have to go with the guys who are going to be here to help you fix it. And frankly, I think some of these guys you should put on the bench to send a message. I mean, that's just me being honest. So this is me trying to be positive. I don't know. I hope I did a good job of it. It's hard, man. It's tough. It's tough as a fan. It's tough as a media outlet. You know, it's tough as a supporter. I mean, I'm always going to support this team. You know, I wore my FSU gear on the way home from that game. You know, I stopped at Buc-ee's on the way back home to North Carolina or South Carolina, and I was waiting to hear some comments about having the FSU gear on. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure like you guys, I know all of you know exactly what I'm talking about. We're hearing it. We're catching it from everybody, every which way, the comment sections. And, you know, I think people are actually maybe laying off a little bit now that we've lost two in a row, that they're kind of starting to feel sorry for us. But, you know, I'm still going to go to games. Like, I'm still going to be at that Florida game. I'm still planning on being at that Clemson game. I'm still going to support this team. I'm still an FSU fan. I'm still we're still going to have Plant the Spear. We're not going to go radio silent until the end of the year because things don't look good. I'm not optimistic that things can get better, but I see a path to where this team can at least pick themselves up off the mat and make a bowl. And you know, I don't want to just come on here and be depressing every single week. I think there will be some times where you have to have real and honest conversations, and that's going to happen a lot on Sunday when me and Michael talk. We're going to have to make some tough, you know, some tough calls at the end of the season and how you can pick yourself up from this. But it doesn't mean that I'm not still going to watch on Saturdays and cheer for this team. But, man, it's a tough time that we're going through right now. So, you know, I hate it. I hate that it's this way. We had a lot of momentum going into the season. And it's gone a complete 180 from where we thought it would be. So if you've watched this, guys, I appreciate you sticking with us. I know it may not be the most exciting time to hear about FSU. You know, maybe just put us on mute, push play, and hit that like button. I don't know. Just help us out, man. I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys sticking with us. You know, like I said, we're going to try to do the best we can. We're going to be honest. We're going to call it like we see it. We're going to judge things as they are on the field. But we're going to try and treat this like we're FSU fans that want to be positive, that want to see this team get better. So those are just some of my thoughts on where we're at and how this season can be somewhat salvaged. You know, there's a lot of warts, but I think there's a lot of little things. This team doesn't do the little things right. They don't do the big things right either. But if you can fix the little things, I think little changes can lead to big results. And I think that's what you have to focus on right now. And so with that being said, guys, I appreciate you tuning in. Go check out the Autograph app. I'll link down to it below. It's an awesome feature for fans for multiple sports. Again, you got fee-free tickets in there. You got score stats. You got all kinds of stuff. You find all of our content in there, podcasts, articles, all that stuff that you guys love. And make sure you be on the lookout for the next episode we have with Michael, where we're going to go big picture, see how Florida State, no matter what the season turns out to be, bowl eligible, 2-10, 0-12, whatever it looks like, how can we pick ourselves up off the mat so this doesn't crash the program? And that's what we're going to look at on Sunday. We'll be back with you guys again, of course, next week for a Memphis preview, as hopefully Florida State can get that first win of the season. So I appreciate you guys watching. Drop a like and subscribe because it really helps the channel out. Rate and review on the podcast if you enjoyed this episode. And with that being said, guys, we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.